If we wish to draw philosophical conclusions about our own existence, our significance, and the significance of the universe itself, our conclusions should be based on empirical knowledge. A truly open mind means forcing our imaginations to conform to the evidence of reality, and not vice versa, whether or not we like the implications. Welcome to The Alchemical Mind. That quote is from Lawrence Krauss, from his book, A Universe from Nothing. Why is there something rather than nothing? And while Krauss is more strictly a materialist, I felt like the quote was apropos to the discussion of today's episode, which of course is Aquinas' third way, the argument from possibility and necessity. Now once again, if you haven't heard the first two parts of this series, talking about the first way and the second way, by all means go back and listen to those, so you can get kind of a grasp and understanding of the logic that Thomas Aquinas is using in order to prove the existence of God, and how all these arguments are kind of intertwined. As I mentioned in the first episode, when I talked about the argument from motion, you have to set up a basis for your experiment. And the experiment that we're undertaking in this series is whether or not God exists, and why. Well, we haven't gotten to the why until now. Because with each subsequent argument, Aquinas is adding a new layer to his argument. In essence, the first three arguments, and maybe even the fourth, are simply variations of each other. But what he's doing is, he's taking that leap of faith, if you will. And I hate to use that word, because it comes with its own baggage. Taking a leap of logic, if you will, by using the same argument, simply based on the observations that we make as we go living our daily lives. And that's the reason that I picked this Krauss quote, because he's doing so in a very scientific way, trying to find this empirical proof for any kind of knowledge, and this way trying to determine why there might be something rather than nothing. And that lies at the core of Aquinas' third argument. Why is there something rather than nothing? And of course, that's a very interesting question, a very deep philosophical question, and one of the hardest questions that we've ever asked ourselves as humans. Because it's very simple to go around observing the universe, observing everyday life, everyday objects, everyday events, and trying to find a way to connect these events into one another in order to determine where they came from. But as Aquinas very astutely mentions in All of His Ways, as you begin going down and down the list of events causing other events or beings causing other beings to occur, we have to get to a point in which we come to this ultimate being, this first mover, which Aquinas, of course, being a Catholic, calls God. And then when you get to that last turtle, the turtle holding all the other turtles, you begin to see the real deep implications of this argument. Now, Aquinas doesn't try to say what the cause of God is. In fact, he says quite the opposite. Because the cause of God is God itself. That's why he's the first cause, the prime mover. And so he uses this kind of argument to postulate his third way. So let's talk about the third way, because it's interesting. And just like in the second way, a lot of it is influenced very much by Aristotle, this idea of contingent beings. So let's explain first what a contingent being is, and then we'll go about determining Aquinas' logic and try to figure out what he's trying to say. A contingent being is simply a thing that could or could not exist. Very simple. Its very existence is contingent. It's dependent on another thing having existed a priori, okay, before that thing existed. So here's how the argument goes. We find in nature, if you look around, remember we're using our senses to determine these things. We find in nature that things are possible to be, and possible not to be. We also see that things come in and out of existence. Meaning things are born, things die, the next thing is born, that thing dies, and so on and so on. Now, based on this, maybe you could assume that every single thing that you see is a contingent being. Everything that you see has some sort of cause that causes it to come into existence. And then maybe you want to assume that for each of these contingent beings, there was a time that it did not exist. So if there was a time for this thing to not exist, then that means that it's impossible for anything that you see to have always existed. So, by extension, there must have been a time where nothing existed. Now, if there was a time where nothing existed, if we're looking at things in terms of cause and effect, of one thing causing the next, one thing moving the next, one thing creating the next, and all of these things are contingent, meaning that they require something to cause them, but also that they could not have existed at some point in time, then in Aquinas' mind, this doesn't make any sense. Because at some point, something came out of nothing. And if something came out of nothing, meaning nothing caused it to come into existence, then there would be nothing in existence itself. Nothing would have been created at any point in time. And therefore, not every single thing that exists is contingent. There must be something that is simply is, just as pure isness, and that thing is God. Beautiful. How simple. There must be some being, some force, some cause, at some point in space and time that requires no cause, no effect. It has no reason to be. It just simply is. That's beautiful, isn't it? It's beautiful. And of course, I'll reference once again that quote from Moses when he goes and gets the Ten Commandments and meets God. And he says, "What should I tell people who you are?" And he says, "I am that I am." Now, in the Hebrew, it's a little bit different. I think in Hebrew, the verb to be is one of these oddballs. I think, matter of fact, the verb to be is kind of an oddball in every language. If you are a linguistics fan as I am, you may be familiar with this, but I think in Hebrew, the verb to be only exists in the future tense. And so maybe the best translation for what God tells Moses is, "I will be what I will be." And that, in some essence, is maybe even more profound than simply, "I am that I am. I'm just existence. I will be what I will be." And in some ways, this has a lot of similarities to ideas that we've explored in the past. For example, in Taoism, we have this idea from Lao Tzu. He says, "The reason why the universe is eternal is that it does not live for itself. It gives life to others as it transforms." Wow, that's profound. And that gives you an answer as to why there is something rather than nothing. The reason there must be something rather than nothing, even if everything that you see has no reason for being in itself, the reason that it exists is that it has to exist. That the reason for its creation must have happened. Now, in our small, ridiculously incompetent minds, this might be hard to figure out. Because again, we can't grasp what existence is in its entirety. All we can do is figure out what our own perspective of existence is, what our point of view, if you will, of existence is. And that varies, of course, based on your life experience, the things you've learned, the things you studied, your upbringing, who your parents were, what country you came from, what language you speak, your understanding of time, of philosophy, of morality. All these things are intertwined into you creating some sort of point of view of what isness is. Now, as humans, what we often fail to understand is that the universe does not care what you think it is. The universe just is. It has no opinions about anything. You need to make sure you understand that. The universe does not care about your opinion. God does not care about your opinion. And why is that? Because God is all of existence. It encompasses all opinions. It is both good and bad, black and white, dark and light, etc. Any characteristics, any attributes that you try to bring to it will never describe it. It will only describe a small, minute part of it. Because you cannot explain totality. All you can explain is the thing that is sitting directly in front of you. Because you're a finite creature living a finite life in a small pebble somewhere in the galaxy. And that's why the true way, and I'm emphasizing true and putting it in quotes, as many quotes as I can put in it, because there is no true. But that is why the true way is one of mysticism, not one of religion, of worship, of ritual or prayer. These are just simply tools that you can use to achieve a certain goal, a certain end. But the true aspect of understanding involves all these practices, plus the practices you could never have imagined. Because God is so total that God could imagine all of these things to exist at all points in time. Now, for the astute regular listener, this should ring a bell to you, because I talk about this all the time. Every single episode, I throw this into the podcast. If you recall back to this idea of the blind man and the elephant, this is how we go about not just experiencing God, but experiencing existence. Of course, these two are one and the same, but God is much more than that. God is so total that he's not just existence, but also non-existence. Because God is the only cause of being, and the cause is simply being itself. The only reason anything exists is because it can exist. Not because God said, hey, let's put this planet in here. The planet looks kind of barren. Let's throw some plants in there. The plants look kind of lonely. Maybe we should throw some animals in there. Then the animals can eat the plants. You know what? There's going to be too many animals. Let's create something that can rule over this thing. Let's create man and woman to guide this bit of creation. That's not the way that God works. That's not the way that existence works. Things are created simply because they can be, because they have the potential to be created, not because there's something, some bearded man in the sky kind of guiding things along and creating things because, this will be good. God doesn't create anything out of goodness. God just simply creates. See, it does not live for itself. It gives life to others as it transforms. What you're witnessing every moment of every day isn't a being guiding the universe. All you're seeing throughout your daily life is a being just being. And you begin trying to find a cause for its being is when you begin to see that you can't find the answer to that being. So you just simply let it be. Of course, there's that beautiful song, Let It Be, Let It Be. Everyone's heard that Beatles song, right? And that was written as these musicians came upon Eastern philosophy and realized a new way to see the world. And of course, they found psychedelics and other tools. But in finding those tools, they were able to write this beautiful song that's so simple. A simple medley, simple lyrics, but that convey a very deep, deep philosophical message. Just let it be. And of course, those of you that have studied Buddhism know that this lies at the core of Zen, for example. Just let it be. I've given the example before of the Buddhist monks that are in the monastery, and there's a rainstorm, and the water begins falling down from the ceiling. And so the master says to his disciples, hey, get something to stop this water from coming in here. And they go out, and one guy brings in a sieve and puts it under there. He's the first one back, brings a sieve, puts it there. And then a few minutes later, the next guy comes and he's got a bucket. And he puts it under this water to stop the water from spreading. And of course, the master says to the one that brought the sieve, "You're the one that gets it. You're the one that understands the way." And obviously, it's not because he saw that the sieve would stop the water. Surely he knew. Because a container with holes is not going to hold the water, right? Water conforms to the shape of the object that you place it into. And if you place it into an object that has holes in it, it's going to go right through the holes and spread back out. But see, there was no thinking involved. There was just pure action. Remember the idea of Wu Wei for you longtime listeners? Action through inaction? Of simply doing? This is what God is doing every second of every day. God has no reason for being, no purpose for creating. God simply creates because that is the way of the universe. You see this in all sorts of spiritual traditions, in mystical traditions in particular. You see this, of course, in shamanic traditions. Traditions that are not mired by dogma, not bogged down by making sure that the prevailing system continues to be in the way that it is, never changing. But traditions that simply observe and react. There's no thought involved. There's no sitting down and writing dissertations for years and years at a time. Sitting down and writing books might take you a year, 2 years, 3 years to write. None of that. You find the experience, or maybe it finds you, and you react to the experience. And this is really deep, very profound, and very important nowadays. Because there's so much anxiety nowadays. There's so much anxiety. And why is there anxiety? There's anxiety because people feel that they have the need to control things. And see, when you begin basing your life, when you create the rule set to play this game, when you try to find ways to cheat it, you realize that the game will play by its own rules. It doesn't care about you. You're simply a player. You're just a pawn in a chessboard. Now, nobody's guiding that pawn, but the pawn will be sacrificed because the pawn doesn't really matter in the larger aspect of things. And the sooner you realize that you're not special, that's when you begin to lose your anxiety because you realize there's nothing for you to control. There's nothing for you to control. You think there's some kind of end game. You think that during life, your end game might be to acquire wealth so you can buy a bigger house and a nicer car and impress your friends. But then when you get that, you realize, well, now I need to get more because there's somebody else that has more than I have and I need to impress that person and so on and so on. If you want to think about this in terms of social value, you see this on Twitter, for example. You get to a place where, say, you have 100 followers, and you say, oh, well, this person has 200, so now I need to do something to figure out how to get 200 followers. And you continue and continue. Now you have 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, 1,000,000 followers, and then what? And then you're still not content because you want more. And then you become anxious because what if you lose your followers? You lose your social monetary value. Or what if you do a podcast, right? I do a podcast. I've been fortunate enough to have a lot of listeners. This podcast is listened in 130 countries. I'm very grateful for that. But never do I say, well, how can I get heard in 150 countries? Or how can I get 10,000 people to listen to the podcast? Because I've realized to me, it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. Because if I try to fight it, I'm always going to continue fighting this uphill battle. I'm never going to push the rock to the top of the mountain. Now again, it doesn't mean you don't do anything about it, right? Wu Wei does not mean that you don't act. You simply act through inaction. Because see, things ebb and flow. Things ebb and flow in the universe. There's no winning or losing. One thing dies, the next thing comes to life as a result of that. It transforms. If you want to think about it in terms of a more dualistic perspective, something has to die in order for the next one to live. I mean, maybe. If you want to think about it that way, that seems like a very negative way to look at it. Because in essence, nothing dies. Everything lives forever. And why does everything live forever? Because all that is, is isness. All that exists is God. And so you're causing yourself anxiety and all these problems because you feel like you need to be in control of anything. You feel like you have to change the world. But see, all you're doing is changing yourself. You're changing nothing else. Because you're so unimportant that whatever you do has no direct impact on anything else. Now, sure, because everything is intertwined, whatever action you take now will have some impact on something in the future. How that connection is made, you will never know. You will never know because you're here for 80, 90, 100 years, whatever. And so the impact that you have, with the things that you say, the things that you do, may at some point in, say, 1,000 or 1,000,000 years, cause a star to turn into a black hole or supernova. But you have no way of knowing that because you don't understand how all these things are intertwined. So I'll give you a basic example. Most of you are probably in a room listening to this, and whether you're inside or outside doesn't matter. The metaphor is the same. If you're inside a house, in a room, above you is a ceiling, and the things that hold that ceiling are the walls. That's the foundation of the ceiling. And the thing that holds the walls in place is the floor. That's the foundation of that. And so you realize, without a ceiling, you can't have walls, you can't have floors, but you can go the other way around too. Because you have to have a floor to have walls to have ceilings. And so the universe doesn't work in this domino flipping effect where somebody flicks that first domino to move the next, to move the next, to move the next. All these dominoes are very intricately connected. The next domino cannot make its movement without the previous one existing. But in the same way, the next domino doesn't exist without that first one. And the first one has no meaning without the next one in the series. And so when you live your life trying to find what the next domino you're going to flip over will be, you're going to simply continue looking for that next domino. When you find the answer to the question that you seek, you're going to figure out that now you have a new question to ask that requires an answer. And once you find that, you get the next question that requires an answer. And the next question that requires an answer. And then you come to some existential crisis because you realize you'll never be able to know anything at all. Because things, beings, objects simply are. And anything could be. Anything could be. If that wasn't the case, we wouldn't have, for example, the modern society that we have today. How does this come about? There were a chain of events that caused things to be created. And if these things in themselves had a reason for being, they would just simply come into existence. But they don't. Because see, anything is possible. When I was on Mike and Maurice's Mind Escape a few weeks ago, one of the things that we talked about in their Patreon episodes, if you're a patron, you can hear that. But I was asked about the UAP phenomenon. So UFOs, aliens, this kind of thing. And of course I believe these things are possible, just as much as I believe that unicorns are possible. And why is that? The answer is very simple. If I can imagine the thing to exist, then it is possible for it to exist. Now, in my own small, minute, unimportant, little tiny, minuscule part of existence, I can make whatever is in my imagination come to being, right? I can talk about it. I can write a book about it. I can draw a picture about it. I can make a sculpture about it, whatever. I can take it out of this ethereal realm of imagination and cause it to gain some sort of physical form and come into existence. I know some of you are very into magic, so you know you're familiar with tulpas and things like that. It's pure magic. Now, you may not deem it as magic because, you know, you're not doing some incantation, doing some spell, mixing some chemicals together, right? Some alchemical formula to make them come into being. You're just using your mind powers to cause imagination to come true. But think about how this works in terms of existence itself. In terms of there being a being so total in God, then you really begin to understand your minuteness and importance, but also how magical it is that you exist. Because see, what happens all the time is that God is just being and imagining the possibilities of being. Possibilities so infinite, because again, God must be all of existence, not just a little guy somewhere up in the clouds, maybe in some castle in the sky. A being so total that this being can generate out of nothingness, out of imagination, concrete things. Now you begin to see the true power of an infinite, omnipotent, omniscient being. Now, of course, there'll be folks that have some arguments as to why this can't be the case. And maybe those people just are very limited in their imagination. Because I'm sure 100 years ago, nobody would have imagined a cell phone. But as we discover electromagnetic waves and radio communication, things like that, you begin to say, oh man, if this is possible, if I can just talk into an object, and that information is transmitted through electromagnetic waves to somewhere else, what if I could create a device, a little box that I can hold in my hand that can do this for me? And so see, that act is the act of creation. That is the act of creation. And this is what God does always. Now at some point in the future, we'll dive back into this in terms of modern magical circles, because you have groups arising all the time taking these ideas and going full force with them. And so you have folks like the Orphic Circle, for example, that were very much behind this idea of imagination and creation. And so the Orphic Circle, for the most part, only allowed people like authors and playwrights and actors and other creatives to join the circle, because in essence, they believe that those people held the power of God in their minds, right? The power to turn imagination into actuality. And isn't that interesting? Because we just come back to philosophies and ideas that are thousands or tens or hundreds of thousands of years old. Because from the beginning, one of the things that I continue to stress is this Vedantic idea of imagination and actuation. Feelings and ideas that you feel are true, but that are simply primitive misconceptions of what the universe is actually trying to tell you. So you can't simply be the one blind man touching the elephant's trunk and saying, ah, it's a giant snake. God's a giant snake. Or touching the elephant's leg and saying, ah, God is a giant tree. You need to be all the blind men. You need to be a group of blind men holding hands and hugging the elephant so that you can understand the fullness of God and why simply is has to be, and why God must be the only thing that has to be, and all of the things contingent on its being. So let's wrap up with a quote from John chapter 5, verse 24, because of course we're doing this Aquinas unit to begin diving into Christian mysticism. Christian magic. That's going to be fun. I'm sure I'm going to receive some hate mail talking about Christian magic, but that's fine. I respect your opinion, and I hope you respect mine. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who hears my word and believes him who sent me has eternal life and does not come into judgment, but has passed out of death into life. And you don't think Jesus was a mystic? You don't think Jesus was a magician? Go back and read that verse again. That will wrap up this episode. Thank you all for listening once again. Of course, you can send me emails, martin@thealchemicalmind.com. You can follow me on Twitter @mindalchemical. You can join the Patreon, patreon.com/thealchemicalmind. And of course, check out all the other links at thealchemicalmind.com. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back in a few days with part 4 of Thomas Aquinas' 5 Ways to Prove God. And that'll be it. Thanks for listening. And as always, remember that you are it. All of it.